You know, the great part about local radio for both STC and NLK is that in those days, in the late 80s and early 90s, both stations had huge, huge numbers, and we actually did serve the public need, necessity, et cetera, et cetera.
Speaking of which, stand by, Bob. Excuse me. WSTC Stanford to WNLK Norwalk.
There you go. ID.
I want to be sure they don't cut the wire too early. All right, God, Bob, go ahead.
So in I guess it was 90 or 91, they decided to flip JAZ to an oldie station and made me program director. And then from there, I went back out to Long Island Radio, but came back. I tried to leave, but they pulled me back in. And I came in under the program directorship of Brooke Daniels, and I was the assistant program director for WSTC. It was basically an all-talk station, and that lasted until, Scott Backerman's group bought the station, and they were foolhardy enough to let me go. And I went on to work for a number of different places, and then I was hired back by Cox Radio in 2001, I guess. Let's see. Sabatino was the program director of the Fox.
Eddie, love you, Eddie.
And Mike Sella was
Mike
the program
Sella,
director.
We love. Hopefully Mike's going to join us here, we think, in a little bit.
Oh, okay. He's great people. You know, everybody who I worked with there, complete professionals. And listen, I worked in a number of New York stations. You don't get much better than the people I worked with. Both STC, NLK, JAZ, Cool, and the Fox. It was just an amazing experience for me, and I'm sorry to see it all end. It's really terrible. But unfortunately, that's the way the business is going.
Well, you know, as we said, things change and things migrate into different things. Now, you're still on the air, right? We can still find you. It's okay. We're allowed. There's no competitors,
yeah.
No competitors here. Jump in. Tell us where you are now.
I'm at 6 to 10 Saturday mornings at I-95, playing, album rock tunes, classic rock, and some currents, and delivering the snappy patter. And I'm also the traffic director, and I understand now why traffic directors are the way they are. It just makes all the sense in the world to me when you're dealing with AEs who have no clue. And I'm sure it still continues today.
AEs meaning the sales folks. I'm going to translate here for those of us so we don't
That's right.
Okay. I don't want to get too insular, because otherwise people are going to go, what are you talking about?
And one of the best things that happened to me while I was at the stations was that I met Pam Landry, who was doing middays at WJAZ while I was the production director. And that's how we got together. And we've been together for 22 years.
Wow.
Tuesday.
A lovely beverage for that.
Several lovely beverages, John. Please.
There you go. Bob, what was your best memory in all those years, no matter what the station it was? Any good things that come to mind?
You know, the fact that JAZ... it gave me a taste for jazz, and I'm doing a jazz podcast with a friend of mine, Annie Taylor, jazzstew.com. But also the fact that all those crazy things that radio stations used to do, like what's inside the black box. There were days when Bill White would just get into the STC van, go down to Cummings Park, and there'd be a line of people just looking for T-shirts or bumper stickers. That kind of thing was always a highlight for me, and that just proved that what we were doing really meant something to many, many people. Mm-hmm. And the same thing held true with NLK. In fact, I was I was up for the job of production director, and I guess afternoon drive on the Fox when Mike Fitzpatrick ran it.
Mm-hmm.
And
Fitzgerald.
Chase came back to me and offered me the program director job of what ended up being QQQ and then turned it to Cool. I just think that just being on a local level and seeing how much local radio meant to so many people was just amazing to me. You know, you just kind of take it for granted, but when you're in the thick of it, it really does mean a lot. And, I'm as you say, we have to move on, but it's unfortunate that now that both these vehicles are going to be gone, and that's too bad.
Well, again, you know, they're moving into a new life, and I'm going to keep a positive thought about it, as I've asked everybody to do. I think it's going to be different. It's not going to be the same. But sometimes not being the same can mean good things, or it can mean bad things. We'll be honest. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, you know, if anybody out there is listening and needs a top-notch production director, I'm always available to talk to.
He's good. He's
Bob,
very good.
Is there anything else you'd like to plug? We got the website in. We got your Saturday morning shift in at the other. Is there anything else you? Because it's an open mic, Bob. You got something else you want to plug?
Yeah,
are you doing dinner theater somewhere? Anything else?
No, but if anybody is making dinner, I'm always up for macaroni and meatballs. Anytime.
You know something? I got to tell you. Again, the nice thing about radio is good old free food.
You know,
if it's free, it's for me.
Here's a funny story. I filled in during the talk era, and Mary Lou DeMillo, I guess that was her name, they called her the...
Marianne.
I know Marianne very well.
Okay. They called her the queen of Stanford, I guess?
Yes. When you meet her, she very kindly reminds me of that.
Right. Well, one day I filled in with her. And I said, attention, citizens of Stanford, we need ice cream. And don't you know, 20 minutes later, somebody brought up a quart of hand-packed ice cream. It was amazing.
Now, sadly, one thing that's changed is these days, we have to have dog-sniffing canines through them to make sure there's nothing evil in them. I mean, people bring us cookies, and we're grateful, but you get a little concerned. There might be a wacko out there.
Well, we've had them, too.
You've had wackos?
One day, we had a guy come up to the studios at 117 Prospect Street with a Magnum, and he wanted to shoot the announcer because he didn't like the weather forecast. That's when we put it. That's what John Martin. That's when we put in the secure doors. That's
true. It
hasn't
changed much. Bob Maroney, thank you, buddy. I got a whole bunch of people here, and we are just a little over an hour and 55 minutes away from going off into the sunset. Bob, take care, Bob. Best of luck to you.
Bye,
Jazzstew.com, right?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, there you go. I don't want to forget the freebie plug.
All right, let me
move on here. Let me figure out how to do it. There we go. Let me move on to this. Hey, good afternoon. Is this Philip?
Yes. Hey, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Philip. How are you?
Hey, Philip,
you had a comment?
I did. We're driving around. Obviously, we came in to say goodbye to John LaBarca earlier today. And driving around, listening to all these people who've been on the show and on the station for so many years. And myself as the newbie, as the new kid on the block, just over a year of doing this. And thinking about memorable parts of the show. And as you'll know, our title sponsor is Stanford Ford Lincoln. About four or five months ago, I went into the dealership because I was thinking about buying a new car, and I went to look at him, and Dominic Franchella, that owns it, came out to see me. He said, hey, how you doing? You're the great show you've got. He said, let me show you something. He pulled out a piece of paper out of his pocket with a photocopy of a photograph of a Model T Ford. He said, do you know what this is? I said, I know exactly what that is. It's a Model T Ford. Why do you ask? He said, no, it's not a Model T Ford. It's my Model T Ford. It's a 1920 original condition with 20,000 miles on the clock. I said, that's very nice.
No, 1912.
I'm sorry, 1912. He said,
I'm going to explain who these people are in a moment, but I want to let the, trust me, guys, work with me on this. All right, go ahead.
So he said, somebody walked into his dealership a couple weeks before and said, I listened to you to this show on WSTC WNLK called... Doc, he said, and you as Stanford Ford have been the sponsor of that show since day one. He said, it's a great show about family values. I would like you to have this Model T Ford. And he gave it to the owner of the Ford dealership in Stanford.
Isn't that amazing?
Boy, that is amazing.
Let me fill in for those of you who may not know. This is Philip, along with his wife Bianca. They have done a show for the past year here at WSTC and WNLK. So they kind of represent the new generation of it. Bianca, his absolutely gorgeous partner, has been in broadcasting for a while and had an idea to do a show on life, love, and parenting, and came to me, and we talked about it. We got it on the air. She involved her husband coming in, Philip, who you hear, who'd never been on radio before, never been behind a microphone before, came into this room, sat down, and like a natural, just took off like a greyhound dog after the rabbit, and has done an amazing, amazing job. And
certainly did.
And
well, thank you, Mike.
You know what? He has the bug. He definitely has the bug. But it's so nice to hear all these old names because I used to work at WWCO, as you know. Like,
oh, sure.
So to hear WATR, to hear Tommy Edison's name, to hear Tom Shoot. It's just amazing all the people that are in radio and stay in radio because we love radio.
It's true. We can. It's like that. There's no exit ramp to radio. There are rest stops, but there are no exit ramps.
Absolutely. I took the rest stop to raise the kids, and then we got back into it last year, and it's been phenomenal. And we just love WSTC and WNLK.
All right. Well, we love you, and again, it's not over yet, guys. I love you, too. We will talk soon, all right?
All right.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys. So... Along with us, by the way, who just joined us, is we're kind of like we're picking up generations. We're going from the beginning of the history of some of these radio stations to more present times. And this is a lady who I worked with here and I worked with in Stanford as well before I came here, has the absolute best looking ponytail in broadcasting, and who I love dear, Lisa Lacerra. Lisa, hi.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm all right.
It's an emotional time for you. Now, you began at WSTC, you know, pretty much you started at, I don't want to say the bottom, but at the bottom.
I did. I started in 1993. I started as a board op, which basically for people who are listening, that means running the controls for other people who are on the air. And then I was hired by Rick Petrone and J.C. Hayes, who worked at Cool 96.7 mm-hmm. at the time. And I started doing the tag sale because they were going to move Tony Reno, who was on WSTC, to mornings on Cool 96.7.
Right.
So I did that on Sundays for a couple hours, and that was, you know, my big break. And from there, I don't exactly remember how it segued, but I also started producing and board opping for Shop and Save Radio, Mike Sella, who I think we're going to hear from later on, or
I hope
he already
so.
Called?
Yeah, Mike, if you're listening, come on, get on the phone. Let him know. Have him let me know you're there. All right.
He used to do a program, and I kind of would add my two cents in with him, and from there I kind of segued into doing news a little bit part time on the weekends when they needed me. And in 1996, there was a change of ownership, and myself and a bunch of people were let go. I was invited back about 2 months later to do news on Cool 96.7.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for a while. And another kind of change in programming there, and I went back to doing news on, then it was just WSTC. So I did news for WSTC part-time, and then when the stations merged, I stayed on and moved up here to Norwalk. And became news director in 2000 and program director in 2005, and was here until 2007.
In that time, what was one of your best memories?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of different memories in terms of, you know, news-wise. We did a really fantastic job with a lot of breaking news. Let David answer his phone.
David, yeah. Justin Bieber's calling David.
What you needed.
Yeah.
Justin, it is yours.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank
out.
You. For those who want to stay relevant, there you go.
I will have to give you a call back.
Can you be any there more live than that, okay. guys?
Hey, David, that's live.
Yeah, was that Tom Appleby trying to make peace, or what's going on there? What's happening?
Simsbury, who has been without power.
Oh, dear.
Along with most of the rest of the northwestern Connecticut for
days and days and days, a week.
Week plus now.
Week, yeah.
Thanks, so David, you can turn around. Someone's trying to hand a note through the door. If you could, you get the note. Let me finish.
It's Danny DeVito.
There we go. Lisa, you start. I started. What was your best memory in that time?
There's a lot of different memories. The 2000 election.
There you go.
That was interesting.
The one that never ended.
The one that never ended. I think it finally ended, you know, a week ago.
You were also here for 9/11.
I was here for 9/11. Going back to the 2000, I remember still being here at the radio station waiting for the race to be called when the morning team came in. It was finally like, well, you guys are here now. I think maybe I'll go home and get some sleep for a couple hours. And I'll meet you. Call me when they call this race.
Did you dare call the race yourself?
No, I did not.
That was a problem a lot of people ran into that year, calling it themselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Here's
yeah.
The facts.
I was here on 9/11. I wasn't physically in the building yet when the first plane hit. I had just moved into my home. I live in Norwalk. And I didn't even have cable yet. I had literally moved in 2 days before. I was getting ready for work, and walked back into the room where my radio was, and I heard Don Russell talk about how a plane hit the World Trade Center. And I went, this is a clear day. Something's not right here.
Something's amiss, right?
Yeah. And my father was in the military for 30 years, so I kind of knew. And called into the station, said, get a terrorism expert on the phone. I'm on my way in. Was here within a half hour, and then all hell broke loose.
Yeah, we rolled from there. Again, something, it's those events and the tragedies, of course, but it's events like that that make people reach out to radio, and radio reach out to people, yeah, to people as well. Dave, let me ask you something, and John, this, you're welcome to jump in on this too as well. You know, a lot of folks have called and whatever, and there's always the question of, oh, what's going to happen with local radio, whatever. David, you migrated from radio to television, but you've been in media in Fairfield County the entire three decades we're talking about, plus here as well. I mean, don't you agree that radio is going to reinvent itself and the needs will be met as the needs are needed, or am I off base there?
Well, I'm certainly hoping so. I think the folks at WSHU and NPR have got the area in their sights, certainly, and I think they're very interested in seeing to it that the area is served. And to me, that is very good. With all due respect to a lot of satellite stuff and so forth that has gone on typically in the last 15 or so years, I don't think that necessarily is serving the communities that it broadcasts to. And so I think as local as you can get, it's something that's a very positive thing for everybody concerned. And it feeds on itself. It will benefit the stations to do that sort of thing because people will be entranced by whatever's being broadcast. What do you think, John?
Well, you know, you don't get local. The feet have to be on the ground. You're right. And I am convinced that if there is an opportunity for that to happen and to expand, it is where the stations are going now.
Well, I think it's much like with print. I mean, everybody's walking around putting a gravestone over print. Print's dead. Print is over with. I don't think print is over with at all. I think the medium will migrate to something different. Maybe it's on a pad. Maybe it's on a screen. Maybe it is. And I think the smart publishers and folks in that medium are already looking toward that and trying to find a model that really works. And to be honest, they haven't found it yet, but they will. There's going to be a financial connection there that's going to make that thing spark and go. Radio, I think, and television, too, are going to be the same. It's really interesting. My son, who worked at the radio stations here and came to radio stations with me from the time he literally was 6 months old, he got the bug and is in California right now working on the internet, doing a couple of shows and working for a big talent agency there. But he mentioned the other day that in his office, he has everybody in his office is a television fan. They're huge television fans.
Mm-hmm.
Only one of them owns a television.
Okay.
Every one of them in there watches TV on the internet.
What they want to watch it.
They've created their own thing. They're not a slave to any kind of schedule of any kind or anything like that. They do. And radio is the same way. Radio, there's so much spoken word out there. If you really truly believe that this medium is dead, go to iTunes right now. Look at iTunes. Look at the number of podcasts and the material generated by so many people out there, not just visually with a television or a video camera, but spoken word like radio. And that really will prove to you that people are migrating to something new, but the medium itself is not even feverish in any way, shape, or form.
What's really going on is the sponsors are trying to figure out how to utilize, how to harness that in a way that works for them.
That is the only thing holding everything back.
That's it.
And
the
medium itself.
Dollars.
I'm sorry, John?
Advertising dollars. They have to flow somewhere.
Sure.
They genuinely do. They genuinely do. And one of the good things about it is that eventually, like I said, that spark's going to take, and it's going to go, and it'll be the thing that moves it in that direction. But the spark or the initial seed, I guess I should say, is already there. It definitely is.
Well,
we're going to break momentarily here so I can drink some water and we can, you know, kind of take a breath nonetheless in the meantime.
All-time favorites, WSTC.
I thought it'd be kind of fun to play some of the songs that we used to play over the years here. David, you still know how to talk up those songs, David? Come on. Let's do it.
I can dance up those songs.
Salvation back.
1400 WSTC, 1350 WNLK, the kind of music you heard on these radio stations with a little bit of a back theme. Therefore, it is the afternoon of memories as we begin to start the closing of the doors here in just a little over 90 minutes for these radio stations. As they, just like most of our friends here, are moving on to their next project, their next things. Everybody's dancing around to get seats here, so we want to do that because we have a gentleman on the phone here whose name has come up a couple of times here on the radio station today, but luckily he doesn't have a lawyer in Connecticut anymore, so he can't really sue us for any of that. He's a person who I met a long time ago in his business and has remained not only a good friend, but one of the nicest and most genuine human beings that I've ever met. And I say that in all sincerity. Mike Sala, welcome back to WSTC and WNLK.
Oh, you were talking about me. I thought you were going to bring on somebody else. I wasn't.
No, that guy left, so I was just going to you.
Well, I appreciate that. It's sort of bittersweet. I get to talk to people like yourself and Dave Guernsey, who I just talked to.
Let me introduce the players. Dave Guernsey, Dave, who was with the stations, worked with me in New Haven, and we'll talk about that fun ride in a little bit. And also was here for a number of years. Lisa Lacerra still with us, and David Smith as well, of course. Now, Mike, let's give some background. You came here when and what did you do?
Well, I've been there in a couple of different incarnations. The first time I was still at the University of Bridgeport as a college student, and I was hired as a part-time sports reporter by Tony Ventrella. Tony worked with David Smith when they first they first came over to WNLK when Mike Hansen bought the station, I guess it was.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So David was there. Hi, David.
Hey, Mike, it's great to hear your voice, my friend.
Good to hear you too, David, and thanks very much for your note on Facebook there. I was going down memory lane there, and it was Tony Ventrella, myself, David,
right,
and Mike DeCesare, who was the news director at that time. We would go up into the wilds of Wilton to some gym that Tony would find for us to play some basketball. And we'd kill each other for a couple of hours there, and we didn't play basketball. We just sort of killed each other. And those brought good memories back. David, you remember that lineup, right? It was you in the morning, Dick Herman midday.
That's right. That's right. George Pulliam there, Bert Steer. Yeah.
Bert Steer. And remember Jim Casey?
Jim Casey, absolutely.
You know, about 10 years ago, he called me out of the blue. I hadn't talked to him in 20 years, it seemed like. And he called me and he said, "Hey, Mike, it's Jim." And I'm thinking, "Jim who?" And he finally says, "Jim Casey, you know, I'm out in Minnesota. I'm programming this little station. I'm looking for a sports director. Do you want to come out?" And I said, "Not really."
I love it. Hey, that's wonderful, though. It was nice that he found you.
I don't know how he found me, to be honest. But, he was the one that did the Bill Collins haircut-a-thon. Remember that time for the former mayor there in Norwalk? You saw him on the cover of... I think it was the Advocate or something, and he said, "Our mayor needs a new haircut because that's just not going to make it." And he took up a collection. I think he collected about $15, and they sent the mayor over to get a haircut.
We should have got the guy from STC who was giving a free haircut.
Well, that was Tony Ventrella.
Yeah,
he was the sports director.
Same guy.
Well, he was at NLK actually. He was sports director and did the haircuts out on the fire escape and up on the roof. Up on the roof of the Kitty Town building.
Now, Mike, you and I...
Tony had gone to first Fort Wayne and then Seattle as a TV sports director, so he had left the state. As many of us former employees tried to do, we all leave the state, you know.
You succeeded for a while. Now, come on.
Yeah.
You succeeded for a longer while a lot of us have. Mike, now, I first met you when you and I worked at a little flamethrower in Bridgeport.
Right.
We can mention on the call letters we want to here, WJBX.
Yeah,
which you and I were there. That's where you and I met. But then again, we met then when I went to work for Cool 96.7, under the previous owner. You and your little compadre over here, Lisa, who was following you along, carrying boxes right behind you, panting along because she was so enthusiastic to be inside a radio station, was there. And then we moved on. You came to work with me up in New Haven, where Dave Guernsey. Dave, say hi. You can say hi.
How you doing, Mike?
Good, Dave. Talk again, third time in a day.
How about that?
And he still is asking for money, which is amazing. You know, we worked together up there, and then you came down here and you put this thing together when these two radio stations came together, and you set them on a path that I have been so fortunate to be able to be on that ship in the past couple of years. But to this day, everything that happened in this station began with you and what you did
truly
to do that, right? Can we agree with that?
Can't agree more.
Well, I think, you know, the folks at Cox were looking to do something a little different with the station, and they entrusted me to come in and basically turn everything over 100%. So that's what we did, and of course Lisa and Dave and a number of other folks all were there to help that out. And you know, it's funny because I started WNLK and then came back a little bit later on after Tony left and a couple other people did in terms of sports. I came back to a little sports, and then years later came back to Shop and Save Radio and WSDC, and then Lisa helped me out with that. So I think the old saying was there's only 12 people in radio. They just change their names.
No, it really is. I mean,
that's definitely true.
People talk about different kinds of geography. There's ethnic geography where everyone, the Irish all know each other, or the Jewish folks always have a connection to somebody. Radio people, you put three radio people from anywhere in America in a room, give them a half hour, and I guarantee you'll get a connection.
Six degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not even 6 degrees of separation in radio. I think it's like a degree and a half.
It truly is, because everybody knows somebody who worked in some city who did something and had the kind of fun that, you know, that genuinely doesn't necessarily always happen in other businesses. Now, Mike, during your time here, we're talking about memories and giving everybody a chance to relive that. What were some of your best memories?
Well, you know, I was involved with the station so many times. I mentioned that, you know, the early days when I first started in commercial radio, I've been working at the University of Bridgeport, you know, with David and that group. They were all such great professionals. Dick Bernerba was another guy that was at the station. And, you know, they were all there at WNLK. So that's a big memory. Of course, at WSDC, working with the group there, you know, all those folks that you worked with over the years, you go back at NLK or SDC and all the things they've gone on to either do or accomplish. I mean, one of the big ones was, I think, Lisa, remind me, was that the blizzard of like 95 or 96 when we had to walk all the way from the station there down to Stanford, down to the train station?
Yeah, that was in 96. We walked from Prospect Street. There were no way for us to get from there to the train station, so we walked, and Mike had to go up north, and I had to go down south to Westchester, but yeah.
I'll let you know that when David Smith and I started in broadcasting, we had to walk 2.5 miles every morning in the snow.
And barefoot.
Yeah.
I just thought of a funny, more recent memory, Mike. Do you remember when the kangaroo got loose in Norwalk?
Oh, that was a good one, yeah. Kangaroo. Dave came up with a great promo. Using the kangaroo tie me down there. Yeah.
I got to find that one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
That was after the Q kangaroo. You remember?
That was a whole other era. Q96 was another incarnation of WSTC's FM signal at the time. It went from YRS to something else to something else. I'm sorry. Excuse me. With the Fox.
Yeah, this was.
It was
a
WNLK's. I should have known that because I worked there.
Yeah.
You think I would remember that? But it was it went through a number of things, including having, like the Fox to this day, has a Fox mascot, which is just a giant suit that some unfortunate sucker who loves radio gets stuffed into periodically and sent out. We had a kangaroo costume that someone would get stuffed into and sent out,
and they never get washed enough.
No,
you know, and on those summer days. Sweltering in the Q kangaroo suit or whatever, you know. It's just,
that's got to be lovely.
Ooh.
I'll tell you, Mike, another memory that comes, and I guess in radio it always stems around like storms or something, because it sort of stands out in your mind. I remember the late 70s, there's that blizzard of 78 when the whole state was shut down.
That's
and
right.
We all slept on the production room floor there at the old...
we were there for the duration, weren't we, Mike?
Yeah,
day after day.
Town building, yeah.
Ella Grasso closed down the entire state. Nobody could budge. So everybody was at home listening to WNLK and trying to find out what the heck was going on while we tried to figure out what was going on in our homes.
Wow.
And worrying about what was going on back in the home front. And finally we got released, and I managed to get up to the Merritt Parkway in my little Honda at that time. And what did I find but a state trooper throwing me off the highway and sending me back onto the secondary roads, which had yet to be plowed. God knows how I finally made it back home, but I did, and lived quasi-happily ever after, you know?
The odors alone must have been inside the radio station. unique in their own respect.
Downwind.
You know, radio, as we said, in all seriousness, does touch a lot of people's lives. I mean, for storms and things like that. And I guess, you know, I'm sure there are folks on the other end of this microphone right now that are nodding when I say that. But you folks need to realize that you touched our lives as well. I mean, there's nothing more, and I think everyone in this room will agree, there's nothing more gratifying than when you get a call from someone who says, thank you for helping me find my lost dog. Thank you for giving me the weather. Thank you for being there. Tell me this, tell me that. And those two words, thank you, mean more than you can ever imagine in this business. Each and every person that's ever said it, we can hear them all. I know everyone in this room agrees, but we can hear them all in our heads.
Yeah.
Truly
covering
over
my event.
Covering my event. Thank you for being there. When you meet at the Oyster Festival, I did the first Oyster Festival with WNLK in 1981. David and I were there. I was at the Oyster Festival literally a couple of months back here as well. And to that day, people would come up and say, oh, that's so, thank you. Thank you for this. I listened to you guys. John LaBarca in the morning, David Smith in the morning, whatever happened to this person or that person. I mean, we do touch the lives.
Yeah.
But you have to realize that you people touch us as well.
That's right, and we all do radio. We all get involved for a particular reason, but that's I think the essence of why you continue to do it, because you like that feedback from the fans, and you know, I guess that's why you you do it. It's because you want to be there when the storm hits, and you're trying to relay that information to people, and 9/11 hits, and you're trying to make sense of that, and at the same time tell people what's happening and how it's happening. And those are the times when, let's face it, the local radio stations become the very voice of what the community is looking for. That's who they tend to gravitate to, because it's happening in their backyard. They need to know what's going on. And over the years, you look back at all the things you're able to do, both on the serious side and the fun things. I mean, you know, the regular callers that call and win the prizes on a regular basis, and all those folks.
Sometimes the same three people.
Yeah.
But Mike, you mentioned storms and so forth. One of the warm memories that my wife has is me closing school for her when she was in school.
Wow.
Right. Let's take a moment to count all the things wrong with that.
She loves nothing more than gloating over the fact that she and all her classmates and so forth around the area used to listen for the snow closings that we would bring. The bane of any morning person or any radio person's existence, doing snow closings. But important
pages.
To everybody, of course. Yes, just ad nauseum. But to the kids waiting at home, oh, it made it. It just
That's really funny, because John LaBarca, John talks about that a lot. He has a different cut. It's his favorite time. And I think the reason is that John, much like Santa Claus or Tinkerbell, feeds off of the people who love him.
Exactly.
And there are so many people who love him, which is why he is larger than life in so many ways. And he, he loves that. He loves truly to this day. And I still think that's something.
He thought it was gelato is what it was. That's what the whole story was with that number.
He was disappointed. He was thrilled last week when he had snow closings on Monday. We had schools that were closed here because of
sure.
I don't know whether you heard about that, Mike. We had a snowstorm a week ago just for fun.
I follow what happens in Connecticut. My son still lives up there, and so he was lamenting the fact that not only did you guys have a hurricane this year, but you had a snow in October that closed down the state. And so, living in Florida is nice now, because we don't get any of those hurricanes. We send them north. We pay extra and have them moved right up to the.
Yes, power outages are us.
Yeah.
Somebody once said that by God, when those great radio stations go off the air, it's the end of the world. And now we've proven it. There we go.
Hurricanes, snowstorms in October.
Mike, you were
next.
You were here on 9/11. You were the man in charge. You were the program director, operations manager at that point. What do you remember most about? Lisa talked about it earlier. I mean, for a lot of folks, that's probably they say that is the Kennedy assassination of so many other generations since then. What do you remember about then?
It seems like it was just yesterday. It happened, so long ago at this point. But I remember. In the newsroom, Kathleen Marple was our news anchor, and she would watch CNN in the morning. I would watch News 12 or vice versa. We'd had a coordinator, so obviously if anything broke that we didn't know about through AP or our own sources, we could sort of sense as to what's happening. I'll never forget, I was on, I think, News 12 that day, and she was watching CNN, and I thought either she had invented a new dance or something was terribly wrong by the way she was trying to flag me down from, you know, through the glass from the newsroom. And I remember flipping over to CNN and seeing the first train tower with the big hole and the smoke coming out, and immediately thinking to myself, this is not normal. This is not an accident, because it was a crystal clear blue day, and just sensing that, you know, there is something really wrong here. And so we went into CNN News immediately, came back out, did the top of the hour, and then Don Russell was doing the 9 to 10 o'clock hour at that time. And Don started, and then about 9 minutes, you know, and that's basically what he was talking about the whole time and keeping people updated. And then when the second tower was hit, we went to CNN, and quite honestly, we didn't take a break for, it seemed like forever. I think I tracked about 130 hours that week, and the rest of the staff did too. And we culminated it with the big fundraiser where we raised over $1 million for AmeriCare. And, you know, it was really a sense of not only the staff doing whatever was necessary and, you know, at the, you know, putting personal lives on hold and, you know, just ratcheting up the professional effort, but to the community. Mm-hmm. I think to this day, I think the people stopping by writing checks or, you know, volunteering a tractor trailer to pick up supplies, or, you know, donating, you know, a truckload of water, from the people that, distributed the water, the soft drink company, or, you know, it was just an amazing feeling to be in the midst of that. And obviously we were the clearinghouse. You know, we were the people that everybody was listening to figure out where all that stuff was going and how to be involved. And everybody wanted to be involved. And I remember the phone ringing off the hook, people wanting to know how they could help and where they could go. I think to this day, that's one of the most amazing things I think I was ever associated with, is the fact that the community rallied, you know, and we were sort of the middle. And, you know, that was both.
Well, radio again, reaches out. Radio touches people.
Mm-hmm.
In a way.
I mean, and, you know, it was interesting is that we took all our colleagues from all the FM stations, all the jocks, and, you know, converted them into reporters, and they were out there. I remember Bob Bain actually brought tears to people's eyes when he was out on the beach, and he could see the smoke rising from the World Trade Center site, and he did a couple of reports for us from that from the beach. And Lisa, you remember Bob doing those?
He was in Rowayton, and he could see from where he stood. He could see the two towers where they had stood, just the plumes of smoke. And that was that night.
Yeah, it just his description and the heartfelt emotion that he you could hear in his voice and that he used in his words. I remember people saying they actually had tears in their eyes by the time he got done. It was something else. Like I said, that being in the center of that storm.
I think Bob Bain missed his chance at being a reporter. I think he
I keep telling him that.
Yeah, I think he would have been a really good reporter.
I agree with that. Well, the nice thing about radio is, we talked about it earlier before you got on, Mike, is that when you come in this business, there is no set path for you. I mean, Lisa talked, for example, in her time about all the different things she did, and all the way back to Peter Holliday, who was here earlier, and John Roman, talked about all the different things that they did. And David, you've done a number, you know, when you started in GCH and in college and whatever, I mean, you were carrying crates of albums around and sweeping up, but we all have done that. We all have done. And the thing of it is, nobody's complaining. If there's not a complaint, and if you're reading into that thinking they're bitching, No, we're not.
No, I think it showed the opportunity that you did have at the time. And now, of course, the industry has changed quite a bit. But, you know, I remember, you know, David being one of the first morning men I actually knew personally, you know, when I first started. And David used to do all kinds of comedic bits. Actually, he used to crack me up. But, you know, that was a, you know, different time. But you sort of evolve and all that kind of stuff. So, and that radio allowed us all to do that. You know, I'm doing Shop and Save one day, and the next day, you know, I'm in Hartford doing sports and traffic. You know, it's just one of those things that...
And up there with me and Guernsey at that wacky group of radio stations in New Haven, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So, and co-hosting a show with Glenn Beck.
yes. Truly one of your favorite broadcast moments, I know, from personal experience. Absolutely. Mike, you know, one of the things that's interesting is the people that we touch. We talked about that. I mean, the number of people you've worked with who are, know, obviously in this room we've got a few, and we've had a few on the air today, but you've worked through this marketplace with a number of good people. Who are some of those names? I want to try and get everybody, all the names that are kind of out there, so that they're all through the antenna, out in people's minds, and never to be forgotten.
Well, Bill Shepard is a...
Who should be calling. Bill's supposed to call us today. I know he's listening because he listens all the during the week.
And well, just, I mean, he might be over at the airport. He does his Goodwill Ambassador thing, so he might be tied up. But
he's a greeter at the airport, really.
Yeah.
Aren't those called? Is he wear the sheet and give the incense out? What do you mean he's a greeter?
He's
at the
not a Hare Krishna.
Oh, well, I thought you were trying to be politically correct. I thought,
he like helps direct people around the airport. Down where he lives in Florida.
Yeah. He hasn't shaved his head, Mike, and he doesn't wear a shirt.
I thought maybe it was a new phase in his life, in Bill's life as well, to see what was going on with it. Who else, Mike, do you remember?
Dick Brescia. Dick was a terrific GM, of course, came out of the CBS radio family, and he was the GM at WSTC for years, and learned a lot of things from Dick, the tremendous professional there. And let's see, Michelle Donofrio, Jim Blykamp. I'm just running down all the names of people that were...
Tony Savino.
Tony Savino. Yep. I'm losing track of Kathleen, of course, Kathleen Marple I mentioned already, and Kathleen's gone on to do stuff in New York as well.
Nobody's adopted Facebook faster than folks in radio. To us, it's been a
self-promotion too.
That's true. But it's been a canvas. It's been a canvas for us to tell stories and talk about it and whatever on it. And it's been great, you know.
And it's the other thing is we probably all know more people than anybody else. We've all worked with so many more people than the average person that goes to work at one place and stays there for a few years. So.
Well, Mike, you obviously recall Mike Hansen, and I know warmly because Mike was one of the great. People, but then owners of radio stations ever.
Yep.
And really sincerely believed in serving the community. And a lot of other folks don't necessarily look at it quite that way. It's the almighty dollar, and that's where it stops. But he was one of those who really felt the need to interact with the community, make sure that everything was being done throughout, and steeped himself in the community. He didn't come from this particular city or... he was down in Greenwich, but he really steeped himself in this whole area to make sure that the community was being well served. He was a great, great owner. And things changed very dramatically when he sold these stations.
Yes.
And the domino theory of picking up stations and just throwing them around and making a couple of bucks here and so forth and passing it on to the next person and so forth started after he sold. And things were never quite the same.
He was a tremendous guy and a tremendous broadcaster. And, of course, you worked with Phil Cutting. Phil was another guy that was the program director there for Mike for a number of years. And was, again, another tremendous broadcaster. And I think about it because that's where my roots, that's where I really started. That's where the foundation of my professional career was. And I learned so much from all those guys, and I was fortunate to be, like you say, involved with people that were good broadcasters. They really believed in the product that they were putting out, and you know, a lot of the philosophy and a lot of the techniques and everything else that I felt, you know, I look back at those days very fondly. And so, you know, this is sort of a bittersweet time again. I know the stations will still be there, but I know they're going to be in a different form. But it's you know, it's an event like this that allows me to talk to a Mike Robb and a David Smith and Lisa Lucera and Dave Guernsey and, you know, all the other folks that we've worked with over the years that did such a great job and were so instrumental in our own personal lives. I mean, you know, and that's one thing in broadcast. You spend a lot of time in the darn radio station. You know, it's not a 9-to-5 job. So.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sure.
So, you know, I want to mention one thing about Mike Hansen and about him as well. That the one little known claim to fame that he has is that he fired me.
There you
I just
go.
Want to bring, and I hold no animosity. I'm just pointing that out for the Guinness Book of World Records.
Well,
we've all been fired. He's a good broadcaster. That's
right. Touche.
Mike, how many times in his... Because one thing about radio in this business...
How many times have you been fired?
Yeah, well, let me explain that beforehand to the folks who are out there. If you work in any number of industries, sometimes getting fired is not necessarily the most... admirable thing to have happen. I mean, usually if you're fired, if you're working in X company or whatever, and you're fired, It's a thing. In radio, it's Tuesday.
It really exactly.
is. You know, in radio, it's a whole different deal. So when you're fired in radio, it doesn't really quite have the same connotation. Sometimes you're fired and you leave immediately. Sometimes you're fired and you're still on the radio. Look at me. And nonetheless, Mike, how many times were you let go over the years?
Well, believe it or not, in radio, just once. So.
Wow, that should be a place in the Guinness Book of World Records for him.
Wow.
Well, I'm a very intuitive person, so before they could, lay the axe down, I always jumped out. So.
Beat him to the punch, Mike.
Wow, good. You bailed out of that plane.
Until the current owners of the radio station there decided that my services were no longer needed here in Jacksonville, I wasn't even fired. They very conveniently let my contract run out, as they say, so. There you go.
David?
Lapsed. Twice.
Really?
Twice.
I thought only once. I thought you were another one-timer.
No, it was here very late in the 90s.
Yeah.
And formats changed very dramatically at that time. At that time, we were doing three radio stations here, not just STC and NLK. We also had Danbury.
Right, WYNE and Danbury.
The whole thing. It was a whole Megillah there. And another change of hands and so forth. And next thing you knew, on a Friday, there was a clean sweep that went through. And then most recently, was doing afternoons at WICC.
Mm-hmm.
For a number of years, and same sort of scenario. The satellite beckoned, and so the satellite got it. And that's
you're so kind.
That was the most recent.
You're so kind, Lisa. How about you?
Let's see. One place. My first radio job. I left on my own. WGCH. I was let go, and from. The old WSTC back in 1996 when they changed ownership, but they brought me back. So does that count?
if Cox calls me tomorrow,
it's a hat.
I'm still fired, and
2007.
Dave Guernsey? Dave Guernsey, did I fire you, Dave Guernsey, at any point in time?
I don't believe
good,
so.
Okay, good. I just want to be sure before I get too friendly.
You actually fired some people that I believed.
Should have been fired.
Should have been fired, and I appreciate that.
Hey, Guernsey, I resemble that remark.
But does selling of the station count? Because I worked at a television station.
It does if you're trying to eat the next day. It really, something really.
I worked at a television station, and we all got canned at the same time.
Like
because
Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
Because the station got sold. Yeah.
Well, sometimes that happens a lot, but it's easier when it's a group of you as opposed to when it's one of you and the rest of the staff, all still employed, is sitting there looking as you're escorted to the door and you hand in your keys. I mean, there's different emotional gambits here. Sometimes it's a group, sometimes it's individual, sometimes it's by mail, usually not. Radio stations are too cheap to buy a stamp. Sometimes
you're on vacation.
While you're on vacation. Yeah, by the way, a good rule in radio, kids, never go on vacation.
The locks have been changed again.
Exactly.
I was actually just saying that a short time ago, but actually fired personally once, and that was from here.
However,
bad company here.
I will say the powers that be were very gracious with a nice severance package and whatnot. So,
well, you're very much one up on me, my friend. There's no question about it.
Same thing for me when I left here.
That's a whole other story and whatever. But I'm just curious how many people actually woke up one morning and were doing something else somewhere where it happened. Speaking of which, Mike Sully, anything you want to plug while we got you here? Anything, because everybody, Maroney, Bob Maroney was on and sold T-shirts and his cab business and something else. So if you want to sell something, now's your chance, pal.
All right, well, I'm not going to get a bill, am I?
No, well,
make a few bucks at the closing.
I don't think there's anybody going to be here to get the check after you send it in, so don't worry about it.
If it's made to cash, I'll be here.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Subi Sales had a little problem with that.
That's right.
But, I operate a kids' party and play center in Orange Park, Florida, just outside of Jacksonville, Jump Zone. It is... actually got a couple of sister stores, franchises in Connecticut and Waterbury and Canton. But, I don't have anything else to plug like Mr. Maroney does. You know, where,
well, that sounds like fun, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I've got a bad
David's
back.
David's about ready to ask for a job.
I'm ready to come down. Or at least jump.
Yeah, I'm always leaning over to talk to the customers who are already about 45 inches tall. So.
And again, it's not Danny DeVito. Good.
No, youngsters. Yeah, we have a good time. It's been a lot of fun. It's sort of interesting. I try to take a lot of techniques and promotional ideas that we learned in radio and apply them to the jump zone. We have a little street team that goes out with a. You're talking about David stuffing somebody in a kangaroo suit. We stuff somebody in a frog suit. I'm sure 30 or 40 years from now, this kid will be on the air somewhere. You know, cussing me out, get him in a frog suit, send him out on the street, but. We send them out to fairs and those kind of things. So a lot of the promotional techniques I learned in radio we're using here to promote our business. So that's, I guess, shows that you can always use the experiences one way or the other somehow in your life. So
you know, that's really interesting. I want to mention that, too, because so often, I think you guys will agree with me on this as well, when you move from this business into another business, either temporarily or permanently, there are so many things in radio you can take with you, so many thought processes and so many ways of doing things that genuinely companies love because, A, we are all willing to bust our backsides, you know, with long hours and stuff, which a lot of folks coming into businesses don't want to do. And the thought process of how radio works when you apply it to other businesses sometimes is fresh and exciting and brand new because they never thought about things this way.
Well, and the adaptability factor that has to come if you've been on radio for any length of time, something always happens that throws a spanner in the works of what the best laid plans of mice and men have come up with. So when you go to someplace else and you can jump at the right time and save them from some kind of a disaster because of your ad-libability, that's a big thing for lots of places, you know?
Plus, we're all just crazed individuals, so our creative juices are always flowing, so that doesn't hurt. I mean, you know, we're always coming up with a great promotional or marketing. I mean, that's what, broadcasting is all about, is promotion and marketing. That's what most companies lack. So, there is some opportunity there for folks that have sort of the slant, the creative slant that we do to be able to put that to use in other fashions and other industries. So.
You taught broadcasting for a while, right?
What's that?
You taught broadcasting for a while, right?
Yeah, I did for 7 or 8 years over the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. And actually, I was doing that at the time that we started and we changed things over in 2000 at the FTC NLK. And in fact, a number of those students that I had in class, I was able to cherry pick the better students and have them all come to work for us. And most of them started as board ops or part-time news people or whatever, and many of them are still in the business. I know Jason Kyle went up to New Haven and worked there, and Dave Horvath, one of our board ops now, is I think an operations manager for the Howard Stern channel at Sirius XM.
Yes.
And, you know, so all those guys have gone on. Brandon Carter, part-time reporter, he's full-time out west someplace in the Denver area doing news. So, yeah, they all... We're at CSB at some point, and I felt it was a way to give back, you know. I mean, I learned from, you know, David and other people when I first started, and I just thought that was a way to repay folks, you know, as to what they did for me. And I wish I had somebody that, you know, was a little bit more formal in terms of that when I got started. So that was a good learning experience. And there's another guy, Tim Clark, was a great broadcaster. He's in real estate upstate Connecticut now, and he's another guy that hired me my first news job, going in on a Sunday morning, and and then after the news was over with, engineering a couple of foreign language programs, you know, and I mean, we all did that stuff. So,
yep.
Well, as you looked at those kids, you probably, even over those 7 years, you saw that bug, didn't you, that we've talked about here? That bug and that look. As you looked at those kids, or even over the 7 years, you saw the... no matter what was going on in the world, whatever was changing, you know, they say, kids don't listen to radio anymore or whatever. You still saw them come through the door all wanting to be in the business, right?
Oh, yeah. No, that was, one of the things that was so great about teaching in that environment. They were all radio. They all had a passion for radio for whatever reason. You know, some wanted to do sports. Some wanted to do music. Some wanted to do news. Some just were there because they just wanted to be famous, you know, as famous as you can be on the low rungs of showbiz that we all enjoyed in radio. But, yeah, but there was a passion for it. They grew up listening to radio, and for some reason that sort of stuck with them. And, listening to whoever was on the air. That as a youngster, as David said, whether it was, you know, school closings or whatever, that sort of run true with them, and they wanted to get involved in that for, you know, at a very young age. So, you know, CSB, that was sort of a great experience to be involved with kids with that kind of passion that really wanted to learn and get into the business.
I've got a guy that you probably aren't aware of, but see represented on Dancing with the Stars and every celebratory show that goes on TV, by the name of Dave Boone, who is a local young guy, and he used to glue his face when you and I were over at the Kittytown building. He'd come and glue his face to the window, looking in and staring at me doing the show and so forth, and we became good buddies, as he was just a young stripling youth at that time, and became a magician through Kittytown downstairs and all sorts of stuff. He has parlayed that into being the writer for the Oscars, for the Grammys, for the Dancing with the Stars and so forth, and has won major Emmys and so forth for doing this stuff. And he went to SHU, that is to say Sacred Heart, and now is as big as it gets in that field.
Wow.
Big time.
Yeah, radio, again, has produced some incredible people, and not only as talents that are still in the business, but those that have gone on to other things as well. We can draw that family tree easily, as David just did, probably 100 times over if we had the time to do that. And nobody has a comment. They're all just nodding at me.
No, I think
they're nodding at me. Mike Sella, thank you. I'm going to let you, because I've already run up your long-distance bill way more than you can afford. Well, maybe you're not in radio anymore, so maybe it's okay.
Well, I'm not in radio, so it's fine. I can do that all day. No, actually, I got to get going to finish out the day here at Jump Zone. Got some kids that are clamoring for something or other, but we'll take care of them in a moment.
Mike is the guy in the clown suit, by the way, in the back.
Yeah.
All right, Chuckles, we love you. We will talk to you soon.
But thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate the time. David, Lisa, and David, too. So nice to hear your voices and talk to you guys. And, you know, someday when I get to Connecticut, we'll have